She grabbed a passing longshoreman by the sleeve. "Please," she said, "what ship is this?"
"She's a wind witch out of Myr," the man said.
"She's still here?" Arya blurted. The longshoreman gave her a queer look, shrugged, and walked away. Arya ran toward the pier. The wind witch was the ship Father had hired to take her home. Still waiting? She imagined it had sailed ages ago. Two of the guardsmen were dicing together while the third walked rounds, his hand on the pommel of his sword. Ashamed to let them see her crying like a baby, she stopped to rub her eyes. Her eyes, her eyes, her eyes. Why did...
"Look with your eyes," she heard Sirio whisper.
Arya looked. She knew all of her father's men. The three in the grey cloaks were strangers.
"You!"
the one walking the rounds called out.
"What do you want here, boy?"
The other two looked up from their dice. It was all Arya could do not to bolt and run, but she knew that if she did, they would be after her at once. She made herself walk closer. They were looking for a girl, but he thought she was a boy. She'd be a boy then.
"Want to buy a pigeon?"
She showed them the dead bird.
"Get out of here," the guardsman said.
Arya did as he told her. She did not have to pretend to be frightened. Behind her, the men went back to their dice. She could not have said how she got back to Flea Bottom, but she was breathing hard by the time she reached the narrow, crooked, unpaved streets between the hills. The bottom had a stench to it, a stench of pigsties and stables and tanner's sheds, mixed in with a sour smell of wine sinks and cheap whorehouses. Arya wound her way through the maze dully. It was not until she caught a whiff of bubbling brown coming through a potshop door that she realized her pigeon was gone. It must have slipped from her belt as she ran, or someone had stolen it and she never noticed. For a moment she wanted to cry again. She'd have to walk all the way back to the Street of Flower to find another one that plump. Far across the city, bells began to ring. Arya glanced up, listening, wondering what the ringing meant this time.
"What's this now?"
a fat man called from the pot shop.
"The bells again, God have mercy,"
wailed an old woman. A red-headed whore in a wisp of painted silk pushed open a second-story window.
"Is it the boy king that's died now?"
she shouted down, leaning out over the street.
"Ah, that's a boy for you. They never last long."
She laughed. A naked man slid his arm around her from behind, biting her neck and rubbing the heavy white breasts that hung loose beneath her shift.
"Stupid slut,"
the fat man shouted up.
"The king's not dead. That's only summoning bells. One tower tolling. When the king dies, they ring every bell in the city."
"Here, quit your biting, or I'll ring your bells,"
the woman in the window said to the man behind her, pushing him off with an elbow.
"So who is it died, if not the king?"
"It's a summoning," the fat man repeated.
Two boys close to Arya's age scampered past, splashing through a puddle. The old woman cursed them, but they kept right on going. Other people were moving too, heading up the hill to see what the noise was about. Arya ran after the slower boy.
"Where are you going?"
she shouted when she was right behind him. "What's happening?" He glanced back without slowing.
"The gold coax is carrying him to the sept."
"Who?" she yelled, running hard.
"The end. They'll be taking his head off, Boo says."
A passing wagon had left a deep rut in the street. The boy leapt over, but Arya never saw it. She tripped and fell face first, scraping her knee open on a stone and smashing her fingers where her hand hit the hard-packed earth. Needle tangled between her legs. She sobbed as she struggled to her knees. The thumb of her left hand was covered with blood. When she sucked on it, She saw that half the thumbnail was gone, ripped off in the fall. Her hand scrubbed, and her knee was all bloody, too.
"Make way!" somebody shouted from the cross street. "Make way for my lords of red wine!"
It was all Arya could do to get out of the road before they ran her down. Four guardsmen on huge horses, pounding past at a gallop. They wore check cloaks, blue and burgundy. Behind them, two young lordlings rode side by side on a pair of chestnut mares, alike as peas in a pod. Arya had seen them in the bailey 100 times. The red wine twins, Sir Horace and Sir Hubba. Homely youths with orange hair and square, freckled faces. Sansa and Jane Poole used to call them Sir Horror and Sir Slobber, and giggle whenever they caught sight of them. They did not look funny now. Everyone was moving in the same direction, all in a hurry to see what the ringing was all about. The bell seemed louder now, clanging, calling. Arya joined the stream of people. Her thumb hurt so bad where the nail had broken that it was all she could do not to cry. She bit her lip as she limped along, listening to the excited voices around her.
"The King's Hand, Lord Stark! They're carrying him up to Baelor Sept. I heard he was dead. Soon enough, soon enough. Here, I got me a silver stag, says they lop his head off."
"Past time, the traitor,"
the man spat. Arya struggled to find a voice.
"He never,"
she started, but she was only a child, and they talked right over her.
"Fool, they ain't neither going to lop him. Since when do they nick traitors on the steps of the great sept?"
"Well, they don't mean to anoint him no night. I heard it was Stark killed old King Robert, slit his throat in the woods, and when they found him, he stood there, cool as you please, and said it was some old boar did for his grace."
"Aye, and that's not true. It was his own brother did him, that Renly, him with the gold antlers."
"You shut your lying mouth, woman. You don't know what you're saying. His lordship's a fine, true man."
By the time they reached the Street of the Sisters, they were packed in shoulder to shoulder. Arya let the human current carry her along up to the top of Visenya's hill. The white marble plaza was a solid mass of people, all yammering excitedly at each other and straining to get closer to the great sept of Baelor. The bells were very loud here. Arya squirmed through the press, ducking between the legs of horses and clutching tight to a sword stick. From the middle of the crowd, all she could see were arms and legs and stomachs, and the seven slender towers of the sept looming overhead. She spotted a wood wagon, and thought to climb up on the back, where she might be able to see. But others had the same idea. The teamster cursed at them and drove them off with a crack of his whip. Arya grew frantic. Forcing her way to the front of the crowd, she was shoved up against the stone of a plinth. She looked up at Baelor, the Blessed, the Septon King. Sliding her stick sword through her belt, Arya began to climb. Her broken thumbnail left smears of blood on the painted marble, but she made it up and wedged herself in between the king's feet. That was when she saw her father. Lord Eddard stood on the High Septon's pulpit outside the doors of the sept, supported between two of the gold cloaks. He was dressed in a rich grey velvet doublet, with a white wolf sewn on the front in beads, and a grey wool cloak trimmed with fur. But he was thinner than Arya had ever seen him, his long face drawn with pain. He was not standing so much as being held up. The cast over his broken leg was grey and rotten. The High Septon himself stood behind him, a squat man, grey with age and ponderously fat, wearing long white robes and an immense crown of spun gold and crystal that wreathed his head with rainbows whenever he moved. Clustered around the doors of the sept, in front of the raised marble pulpit, were a knot of knights and high lords. Joffrey was prominent among them, his raiment all crimson, silk and satin, patterned with prancing stags and roaring lions, a gold crown on his head. His queen mother stood beside him in a black mourning gown slashed with crimson, a veil of black diamonds in her hair. Arya recognized the Hound, wearing a snowy white cloak over his dark grey armour, with four of the king's guard around him. She saw Varys, the eunuch, gliding among the lords in soft slippers and a patterned damask robe, and she thought the short man with a silvery cape and pointed beard might be the one who had once fought a duel for Mother. And there, in the midst, was Sansa, dressed in sky-blue silk, with her long auburn hair washed and curled, and silver bracelets on her wrist. Arya scowled, wondering what her sister was doing here, why she looked so happy. A long line of gold-cloaked spearmen held back the crowd, commanded by a stout man in elaborate armor, all black lacquer and gold filigree. His cloak had the metallic shimmer of true cloth of gold. When the bell ceased to toll, a quiet slowly settled across the great plaza, and her father lifted his head and began to speak, his voice so thin and weak she could scarcely make him out. People behind her began to shout out, "What?" and "Louder!" The man in the black and gold armor stepped up behind father and prodded him sharply. "You leave him alone," Arya wanted to shout, but she knew no one would listen. She chewed her lip. Her father raised his voice and began again. "I am Eddard Stark, Lord of Winterfell, and Hand of the King," he said more loudly, his voice carrying across the plaza, "and I come before you to confess my treason in the sight of gods and men."
"No," Arya whimpered.
Below her, the crowd began to scream and shout. Taunts and obscenities filled the air. Sansa had hidden her face in her hands. Her father raised his voice still higher, straining to be heard. "I betrayed the faith of my king and the trust of my friend Robert," he shouted. "I swore to defend and protect his children. Yet before his blood was cold, I plotted to depose and murder his son and seize the throne for myself. Let the High Septon and Baelor the Beloved and the Seven bear witness to the truth of what I say. Joffrey Baratheon is the one true heir to the Iron Throne, and by the grace of all the gods, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, and Protector of the Realm." A stone came sailing out of the crowd. Arya cried out as she saw her father hit. The gold cloaks kept him from falling. Blood ran down his face from a deep gash across his forehead. More stones followed. One struck the guard to father's left. Another went clanging off the breastplate of the knight in the black and gold armor. Two of the king's guard stepped in front of Joffrey and the queen, protecting them with their shields. Her hand slid beneath her cloak and found needle in its sheath. She tightened her fingers around the grip, squeezing as hard as she had ever squeezed anything. "Please, guards, keep him safe," she prayed. "Don't let them hurt my father." The High Septon knelt before Joffrey and his mother. "As we sin, so do we suffer," he intoned in a deep, sweating voice, much louder than father's. "This man has confessed his crimes in the sight of gods and men here in this holy place." Rainbows danced around his head as he lifted his hands in entreaty. "The gods are just,
yet blessed Belor taught us that they are also merciful. What shall be done with this traitor, your grace?
1,000 voices were screaming, but Arya never heard them. Prince Joffrey, no, King Joffrey, stepped out from behind the shields of his king's guard.
My mother bids me let Lord Eddard take the black, and Lady Sansa has begged mercy for her father.
He looked straight at Sansa then, and smiled. And for a moment Arya thought that the guards had heard her prayer, until Joffrey turned back to the crowd and said,
"But they have the soft hearts of women. So long as I am your king, treason shall never go unpunished. Sir Ilion, bring me his head."
The crowd roared, and Arya felt the statue of Baelor rock as they surged against it. The High Septon clutched at the king's cape, and Varys came rushing over, waving his arms, and even the queen was saying something to him, but Joffrey shook his head. Lords and knights moved aside as he stepped through, tall and fleshless, a skeleton in iron mail, the king's justice. Dimly, as from far off, Arya heard her sister scream. Sansa had fallen to her knees, sobbing hysterically. Sir Ilion Payne climbed the steps of the pulpit. Arya wriggled between Baelor's feet and threw herself into the crowd, drawing needle. She landed on a man in a butcher's apron, knocking him to the ground. Immediately someone slammed into her back, and she almost went down herself. Bodies closed in around her, stumbling and pushing, trampling on the poor butcher. Arya slashed at them with needle. High atop the pulpit, Sir Ilion Payne gestured, and the knight in black and gold gave a command. The gold cloaks flung Lord Eddard to the marble, with his head and chest out over the edge.
"Here, you!"
an angry voice shouted at Arya, but she bowled past, shoving people aside, squirming between them, slamming into anyone in her way. A hand fumbled at her leg, and she hacked at it, kicked at shins. A woman stumbled, and Arya ran up her back, cutting to both sides. But it was no good, no good. There were too many people. No sooner did she make a hole than it closed again. Someone buffeted her aside. She could still hear Sansa screaming. Sir Ilion drew a two-handed greatsword from the scabbard on his back. As he lifted the blade above his head, sunlight seemed to ripple and dance down the dark metal, glinting off an edge sharper than any razor. "Ice," she thought. "He has ice." Her tears streamed down her face, blinding her. And then a hand shot out of the press and closed around her arm like a wolf trap, so hard that needle went flying from her hand. Arya was wrenched off her feet. She would have fallen if he hadn't held her up, as easy as if she were a doll. A face pressed close to hers, long black hair and tangled beard and rotten teeth.
"Don't look,"
a thick voice snarled at her.
I...
Arya sobbed. The old man shook her so hard, her teeth rattled.
"Shut your mouth and close your eyes, boy."
Dimly, as if from far away, she heard a noise. A soft, sighing sound, as if a million people had let out their breath at once. The old man's fingers dug into her arm, stiff as iron.
"Look at me. Yes, that's the way of it. At me."
Sour wine perfumed his breath.
"Remember, boy."
It was the smell that did it. Arya saw the matted, greasy hair, the patched, dusty black cloak that covered his twisted shoulders, the hard black eyes squinting at her, and she remembered the black brother who had come to visit her father.
"Know me now, do you? There's a bright boy."
He spat.
"They are done here.
You'll be coming with me. And you'll be keeping your mouth shut.
When she started to reply, he shook her again, even harder.
Shut, I said.
The plaza was beginning to empty. The press dissolved around them as people drifted back to their lives. But Aria's life was gone. Numb, she trailed along beside Yorin. Yes, his name is Yorin. She did not recall him finding Needle until he handed the sword back to her.
Hope you can use that, boy.
I'm not, she started. He shoved her into a doorway, thrust dirty fingers through her hair, gave it a twist, yanking her head back.
Not a smart boy. That what you mean to say?
He had a knife in his other hand. As the blade flashed toward her face, Aria threw herself backward, kicking wildly, wrenching her head from side to side. But he had her by the hair so strong she could feel her scalp tearing, and on her lips the salt taste of tears. Bran. The oldest were men grown, 17 or 18 years from the day of their naming. One was past 20. Most were younger, 16 or less. Bran watched them from the balcony of Maester Lewin's turret, listening to them grunt and strain and curse as they swung their staves and wooden swords. The yard was alive to the clack of wood on wood, punctuated all too often by thwacks and yowls of pain when a blow struck leather or flesh. Sir Roderick strode among the boys, face reddening beneath his white whiskers, muttering at them, one and all. Bran had never seen the old knight look so fierce.
No, he kept saying, no, no, no.
They don't fight very well, Bran said dubiously. He scratched Summer idly behind the ears as the dire wolf tore at a haunch of meat. Bones crunched between his teeth.
For a certainty, Maester Lewin agreed with a deep sigh.
The maester was peering through his big mirrorish lens tube, measuring shadows and noting the position of the comet that hung low in the morning sky.
Yet given time, Sir Roderick has the truth of it. We need men to walk the walls. Your lord father took the cream of his guard to King's Landing, and your brother took the rest, along with all the likely lads for leagues around. Many will not come back to us, and we must needs find the men to take their places.
Bran stared resentfully at the sweating boys below. If I still had my legs, I could beat them all. He remembered the last time he'd held a sword in his hand, when the king had come to Winterfell. It was only a wooden sword, yet he'd knocked Prince Tommen down 50 times. Sir Roderick should teach me to use a poleaxe. If I had a poleaxe with a big long haft, Hodor could be my legs. We could be a knight together.
I think that unlikely, Maester Lewin said. Bran, when a man fights, his arms and legs and thoughts must be as one.
Below in the yard, Sir Roderick was yelling,
You fight like a goose. He pecks you, and you peck him harder. Parry! Block the blow! Goose fighting will not suffice. If those were real swords, the first peck would take your arm off.
One of the other boys laughed, and the old knight rounded on him.
You laugh, you! Now that is gall. You fight like a hedgehog.
There was a knight once who couldn't see, Bran said stubbornly, as Sir Roderick went on below. Old Nan told me about him. He had a long staff with blades at both ends, and he could spin it in his hands and chop two men at once.
Simeon Star Eyes, Lewin said, as he marked numbers in a book. When he lost his eyes, he put star sapphires in the empty sockets, or so the singers claim. Bran, that is only a story like the tales of Florian the Fool, a fable from the Age of Heroes.
The maester tisked.
You must put these dreams aside, and they will only break your heart.
The mention of dreams reminded him. I dreamt about the crow again last night, the one with three eyes. He flew into my bedchamber and told me to come with him, so I did. We went down to the crypts. Father was there, and we talked.